Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.
Help, I need somebody. Help, not just anybody. Help, you know I need someone. Help.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to what will soon be another award-winning episode of Real Recovery. Bill Arnold across the studio, George P. Fraser. Hello, George.
Hey, Bill.
George, we are very confident of our abilities. Problem is, we have limited abilities.
We're confident, though.
Yes. George is a licensed chemical dependency counselor. And do you think that the professors that gave you your degree still have their accreditation?
I don't know. I never met them, Bill. You know, it was an online deal.
Well, thing, yeah.
You know, late at night, kind of. You know, got through it.
Yeah, after midnight. Well, good. George, we have a very exciting show tonight. And if you have listened to Real Recovery in the past, there's a good chance you heard an interview we did with Michael Cusick, who wrote a book called Surfing for God, among others. And that story was absolutely riveting. And tonight, we have Michael's wife on.
Yes.
And we're going to bring her on in just a little bit. George, her world came crashing down 20 years ago when her husband was sort of just caught in a tangled web of lies and had confessed to acting out sexually and being hooked on pornography. So,
well, I think he's one of our best guests we've ever had. And one of the things that he brings to the table is he's very open, vulnerable, but he knows the 12 steps and he knows Jesus and he knows about redemption and he's working with other people. I learned so much both times
too.
He's been on.
He's like part psychologist, part preacher, part pastor, part... everything. I mean,
he's a regular guy.
Yeah, yeah, and he was one of our favorite guests. So how exciting to talk to his wife tonight.
Yes, this will be good.
She has been on the other end of this issue. And at Real Recovery, we always love to talk about some of the calisthenics of recovery, which we get from the 12 steps, which we believe really are Bible-based. And
they are biblically based in their origin. And we talked about pornography a little bit, Bill, and I think I shared that I think the only men that have a problem with pornography are men that have seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a common ground here that there are things that we shouldn't mess with. And tonight when we talk about steps 8 or 9, step 8 is we made a list of all people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And the 9th step ties in with that, where we make direct amends wherever possible, except when it's going to injure somebody. And that's a very small part of it. But here's what it gets down to. If you're really sorry about what you did, don't do it anymore. This is a step, Bill, where we need action. You know, we can talk the talk all we want. A lot of times we're the star in our addiction and our recovery. We all know people in our lives, and God bless them. They've changed. They've stopped doing a behavior, but they've affected our lives. And the tendency then is to go, I'm okay. You're okay, too. You're not upset about what I did before because I'm a new creature in Christ. And you're darn right I'm still upset about it, and I'm still hurt. And so what these are is I want to clear my side of the street. And when I first got sober, I had to do this with my dad. And he looked at me and he said, a real man, if he's truly sorry, he doesn't do it anymore. Because if you're like I was and still am, there's a lot of false promises that are hard to keep. And what this step says, if you say you believe in Christ and you're walking with him, you better be ready to do it. Don't say you're doing it. Do it.
But that little vein on your forehead almost exploded when you were...
I start talking about my dad. I freak out.
I know. You get
he's only been dead 9 years, but I know I'm going to see him again. I know he's watching.
You get very emotional about that, and I appreciate the passion and intensity you have about that. You know, we can talk about, you know, what you just said, which is, you know, you stop the behavior, and that sometimes is so much easier said than done because we live in a world of triggers. We live in a world where we are constantly inflamed. And sometimes when you're in a situation of temptation, the big question to ask is, okay, what do I hope to get out of this sin?
Yeah.
And usually the answer is something incredibly short-term, something incredibly selfish, and something that is not going to be honoring to God at all.
Shockingly, you hit on a great point there, Bill.
Well, every once in a while.
I want to pursue that a little bit. I think for me, when that sin is attractive, there's something I will get from doing it that I'm not getting in my walk with Jesus. Mm-hmm. And let me expand on that a little bit. For me, a lot of times it's the excitement. There should be nothing more exciting than talking to people and sharing Jesus Christ with them. I know you do it every week down at the Salvation Army. So I think for me, when I get bored a little bit, Bill, I got to get out of myself and take it to the street a little bit and share what God has done in my life. But you hit on a real great point there. There's a reason that sin is attractive, and it's offering something we think we need out of our life. But coming along with it is a lot of consequence that we don't need. And we talk about thinking it through. Well, I want to think through, what would Christ have me do?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I'm trying to get something that I can only get from Christ. It's a God substitute.
When you are living and trying to experience reality, the only way to do that is to do it with a clear head.
Yeah.
And that is not the easiest thing to do in a world where we love to take shortcuts and we love to blur our pain. And I've often heard it said before, when you use anything in place of God, and you try to numb feelings, you're going to numb the bad feelings, but you're also going to numb the good feelings.
I like that.
And you're going to start taking yourself out of the game, where more and more you're just going to be numb to everything.
Just kind of a numb guy. I think that's easy to do. We talk about being apathetic, and part of it is, I just don't want to get involved. I don't want to be vulnerable. And I was listening to a show you were on with Susie Larson this week and Dr. Glenn Pickering, and he talked about not being vulnerable. Well, if you're going to do these two steps, you are going to be vulnerable because you're laying yourself on the line. And I think what Dr. Pickering's point was, the reason we aren't vulnerable is we don't want to be found out and we don't want to be alone. But by not being vulnerable, we wind up alone.
Well, I know.
It rang for me because I spend a lot of time alone. I think I annoy most people. But, you know, it really rings true.
Boy, there's an awkward pause, awkward silence.
I like the stare. You had three good lines you wanted to use, but you didn't. You had a good quiet time today,
Wild
didn't
horses
you?
Held me back, George.
Yeah.
Wild horses. Well, Georgia, anything more on 8 and 9 that we can share with our listeners that just need to be reminded of?
I mean,
that's got to be a hard thing to do, is make amends to people and to not injure them in an attempt to do so, because people can use amends as a weapon, can't they?
Sure. Sure you can.
Okay, I'm sorry, all right? Well, that doesn't feel good.
What can I do to make it right?
That's
what I want to look at.
Never having done it would have made it right.
Okay. Please forgive me. I can't change the past, but I want to make it right and go forward in the future.
Are we role-playing right now?
Well, it kind of went into it, you know. but I think that's what we're talking about. And I go to the Bible where Christ said, you got to look at what the building's going to cost you before you decide to build it. This is one, Bill, we don't want to go running into without really thinking about it and being realistic. You're going to be accountable. And I think we can break the commandment. I think it's the third commandment about using God's name in vain. If I go to you in God's name that I've got recovery, I don't want to besmirch his name by not staying in recovery.
Yeah. What does besmirch mean?
I just made it up.
Yeah, can you use words? I don't know what they mean.
You know, I'm doing a lot of King James lately. I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm old. Just bear with me. But I think you know what I mean. Be genuine.
Uh-huh.
If you're doing this because Christ has given you another chance, do it.
Yeah. Well, you completely threw me off with that word.
Did I besmirch you?
Yeah, I may not come back from that one.
Aaron knows. I don't know.
Aaron, do you know? He's just giving me the big right-hand wave. In other words, he doesn't know either.
Left hand, actually.
But our guest tonight is Julianne Cusick, and she is the wife of Michael Cusick. And Michael... She and Michael have a ministry called Restoring the Soul, helping people get free from sexual addiction and a whole lot more. They're really a living testimony to God's grace and healing power and what God can do in life and in marriage. And they've got a lot to share and have been very instrumental in helping people rebuild their lives from the brokenness that comes with addictions of sexual nature.
Let's get to her.
Yeah, so no more of us, George, huh? So welcome to the program, Julianne Cusick. Hello, Julianne.
Hello, George. Hello, Bill. Thank you so much for having me on the show today.
Yeah. Just for reference point, whenever you greet us, always use my name first.
Yes, I'm so sorry. I realized my error.
Well, we just have a couple of minutes before we're going to take our first break, Julianne, but we want to welcome you to the program and say, wow, when I first read Michael's book, and I know you're going to push against me, but I was really in awe of you. I was in awe of what God did, but I was really in awe of your attitude and and what you decided to, how you decided to dig in and work at your marriage.
Well, I will dismantle that awe when I let you know just how angry and bitter I was for at least 5 years, and how I was not making amends, but I was doing everything to hurt Michael because I was so hurt.
And you certainly felt you had every right to be as mean as you wanted because of what he did.
Absolutely, I did. And, you know, he may have been an adulterer with lusting in his heart, if we look at Jesus' words in the New Testament, but I was a murderer because of the anger that I harbored in mine and lashed out at him with a lot of anger.
But you wanted your pound of flesh, didn't you? You just were so angry.
And I did, I was.
We want to hear about all the thoughts that went through your head and some of the feelings you had, and we're going to ask you to open the floodgates tonight.
All right.
Which I know you probably will be willing to do. So thank you very much for being part of the program tonight. We're talking to Julianne Cusick, and we're going to take a very short break. When we come back, you're just in for a great night. Thanks for listening to Real Recovery with Bill Arnold and George Fraser. We've got Aaron on the board tonight, so we'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Whether you've joined us tonight on purpose or by accident, either way, we'll take it. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, we're talking to Julianne Cusick tonight. She is part of a ministry called Restoring the Soul, and her husband Michael has written an amazing book called Surfing for God. And she was on the other end of an adulterous affair and has a lot of things to say about it. Julianne, one of the first things I want to ask is, just the range of emotions, anger, all of that. Can you kind of describe what that looked and felt like?
Oh, yes. If you've ever seen the movie Perfect Storm, where all of the elements come together and create lightning and waves and winds, and it's the perfect storm, I would say that would be how I was, with rage, anger, tears, depression, betrayal, hurt, pain. The list just goes on. I don't think there's an emotion out there that I didn't feel when I discovered Michael had been lying to me and had been doing things that I didn't know about and didn't want him doing. I was just devastated.
And what kind of boundaries did you try to start by having in your house? And did he get kicked out? Did he?
Oh, gosh, that's a good question, Bill. Well, sleeping in the same bed with me, being in our bedroom, was totally off limits. I remember for what seemed like weeks or months, and it probably was, sleeping behind a locked door with him in the other room and one or both of us crying ourselves to sleep.
So that was went on for how many years?
Well, when this happens to me or to anyone else, I really I feel that time is needed. Many times men want their wives to get over it real quickly. Many times women want to make a decision real quickly, like, I'm out of here, I'm done. And I counsel women that I meet with to not to make a decision for a year, which when an infidelity, whether it's like in my case, pornography, cruising, whether it's a full-blown emotional affair, sexual affair, they want to make a decision now. They want to stop the bleeding. 6 weeks, 3 months feels like a long time. A year feels like eternity. However, it really takes at least 1 year to be able to walk through the steps. To be able to make a decision. Is there hope for this marriage? Is it over? And for the wife to have a chance to heal. Because this is a shock to her, the betrayal. It's much like being in a severe car accident where you're rushed into ICU.
When you made this discovery, am I right, you had not been married very long?
No, we hadn't. We had been just celebrated our third wedding anniversary. And I caught Michael in a lie and found out that he'd been living a double life. And I was devastated. I was a young woman in my early to mid-20s. I had idealized a Christian man and Christian marriage and had hopes for children. And at that point, I thought, oh, you know, this is what I saved myself for. You've got to be kidding me. I felt betrayed by God, betrayed by Michael. I was hurt. I was angry. And I thought, we haven't been married long enough to go through something like this. Surely this happens to people who've been married 20 years and they've got some ground underneath them. I didn't feel like we had any good foundation to begin with. And in fact, we really didn't. That was the one thing that I sensed the Lord was saying is, what you've had is a house of cards. You know, you've built your house on the sand. If you really want a real marriage, build your house on me, the rock. And we've now been married 23 years. So 20 years later, now I'm able to see the difference between a house on the sand and a house on the rock.
My guess is, in instructing people or counseling them to wait a year, that we want to really escape the pain and do anything to, you know, avoid what we're feeling. Is that the basis for that?
Oh, yeah. There's everything. There's just so many things that play into that. But truly, the woman is in such shock that it takes that amount of time, I think, to be able to process. Along with that, as you're talking about the 12 steps and, you know, making amends, many times things don't come out into the light right away. A man might be caught, as my husband, Michael, was caught. I caught him in a lie. And there's a big difference between being caught and coming forward. And so when a man is caught, the time frame where the truth comes out is extended. And it can take a year or more or never. But I encourage women to give it a year for a full disclosure to come forward from him. When a man comes forward on his own and discloses, that's a sign that he's tired of this, he wants to change, and he's bringing the truth into the light. And while it will still take a minimum of a year for the wife to process through that reality, you know, because her reality was something different, he's known all along and she hasn't, so suddenly her reality is all in question because she hasn't known about this before. And it takes time to process through that. I know one of the things that I heard George mention was how we can be the star in our addiction and in our recovery. And I see that frequently with sex addiction, where the men are the stars of their addiction. You know, they've done X, Y, and Z, and now they're the star of their recovery. You know, they have this specialist and this counselor, and they're going to this group and reading this book. And the wife, who's been like drive-by shooting, is in ICU, and she's alone, and there's nobody there for her. So the isolation, the shame, the loneliness, the not being the star, getting the attention that she needs, just multiplies what the woman goes through. So I went through this alone. I went, walked this journey, except for one and a half people. I say half because the second person was there just part-time. But basically alone. And how the Lord drew me out into helping and speaking to other women was, I didn't want other women to go through what I had gone through, because the pain, the suffering, the silence, the shame that goes with that, it was unbearable. And so to be able to offer a place for women and space for women to process and to journey. And if there's one thing I would say to your women listeners who find themselves in this situation, past, present, or down the road, is you're not alone. You feel like you're alone. You're not alone. There are women out there who have been through this and who are there to help and walk with you. And that's my mission, is to walk with women as they walk through what I call the valley of the shadow of death of your husband's sexual struggles. And there really is a death that they're walking through.
I can't imagine that. And my guess is that it gets a little worse, Bill, in that, let's say your husband starts getting better. Well, you still have all those unresolved feelings, and maybe there's a little bit of guilt that you're not happy that he's getting better, because, you know, he's still the star. You know, he went through it. He did the deal, and now he's getting better. Praise God. You know, he's confessed, and you're just beat up. Is that a piece, too?
Oh, yeah, that was me. 5 years after, Michael was walking in freedom. He was leading men's groups. Guys were getting free from sex addiction. He was public in his, with his story. And, you know, I was angry and ticked off at home, stewing with rage and bitterness. And through my part of my story is I was walking in shame and covered in shame, and I hadn't even done anything, quote-unquote, wrong. He was the one who'd gone out and sinned, but he was walking in freedom, and I wasn't. And so that was part of my journey, and my story was processing through my anger, my resentment, my bitterness, my disappointment. You do this to me, and now look at you. You're all healed, and I've got a bunch of crap sitting in my lap, and boy, does it stink.
And not to mention, he's got this network of support out there that he didn't previously have, and they're encouraging him and supporting him, and you're at home feeling isolated and broken and in pain.
Yeah, so either way, whether the man is jumping in and he's doing his recovery work and he's repentant, and you know, that's hard because many times the woman is angry because, oh, sure, now you show up. Why the hell couldn't you have showed up, you know, 5, 10, 20 years ago and not brought this train wreck through our lives? And if he's not recovering, if he's still lying, if he's still hiding, if he's still in the darkness and holding back the truth, she senses that as well, and so she has even a greater dis-ease of this isn't over. You know, there's more to come. And many times, you know, there's a combination or a season of both in the process of recovery.
How do you counsel women who have what they might see as a biblical out to leave, to stay? What do you say to them?
You know, I tell them that whatever many years they have invested in the marriage, and I've seen everything from, you know, 5 to 40 years, if you've got this much time in the marriage, that you owe it to yourself to finish well. And that means whether the marriage stays together or not, that it's a benefit to the wife to end well, because then she's not taking hurt and pain and baggage with her into the future. Not everybody hears that. They want out, and no one's going to tell them differently. And I'm not saying you need to stay. You have biblical grounds for divorce. You know, looking at pornography is grounds for a biblical divorce in our view. It's not whether you stay or go. It's why you do it and how you do it. And many times it's a knee-jerk reaction that creates more pain down the road if it's not done well. And so that's my heart for the woman is, hey, look, you've already been through hell. Let's not make it worse on yourself. Give yourself some time to heal. Contact, you know, an attorney. There's certain steps that you need to go through, whether you're reconciling your marriage or pursuing a separation or divorce, that's just bringing more truth out into the light. Give it time. Time is on your side. It's not wasted time. And that's something that I hear a lot from women is I've wasted 20 years in this marriage, and this is what he's been doing. You know, I don't want to waste the next 20 years of my life. The time that you spend after a disclosure, after you find out your husband's had an affair or is hooked on porn, it's not wasted time. It's time to discover what's going on, to have everything brought into the light. It's time to get support and perspective. And so that's kind of where the direction that I come from.
Julianne, we're going to take a very short break. But when we come back from the break, I'd like to have you answer the question. I'd like to hear what advice others around you were giving you when this first happened. And was it helpful or harmful? And how you shared with people.
Okay.
So, you know, a lot of people realize that their friends try to fix their problems right away. And it's a combination of you were probably just in so much pain you needed love and support, yet everyone tried to fix you and give you advice. Is that fair enough?
Yes.
Yeah. So when we come back from the break, we're going to deal with those questions and many others that we've got coming up. You are listening to Real Recovery, Bill Arnold and George Fraser. Thank you for listening to the program tonight. We've got Aaron on the board. We've got a lot more coming up with Julianne Cusick. We'll be back in just a minute. Welcome back. So glad you're still with us. Bill Arnold, George Fraser, you're listening to Real Recovery. We're talking to Julianne Cusick tonight. Her husband, Michael, wrote a book called Surfing for God, among others, and it's talking about the issue of infidelity and pornography. And one of the questions we asked Julianne right before break was the kind of advice others around you gave you at this time. And was it helpful or harmful?
Thanks, Bill. That's quite a question. I'll answer it, if I may, first from personal and then from the wisdom and experience I've gleaned from the many women God's brought into my life over the years. For me personally, there were two things that were incredibly helpful that a mentor, counselor, friend of ours said to me. And the first thing he said to me was, he looked me right in the eye and he said, Julianne, this is not about you. This is about Michael. You are 0% responsible. He's 100% responsible. And so putting the weight of Michael's actions on Michael was wonderful. It gave me perspective and it was just a godsend. It really grounded me. The second thing he said was that I had grounds for biblical divorce and that he himself would drive me to the attorney. And so the weight of that, knowing that it was serious, that he was supporting me, was it was priceless to me. I leaned on that far after those words were spoken. They carried me through weeks and months, and they still carry me as I walk now with other women, and I'm able to share those words with them. So I was very grateful for that. Because I was pretty isolated and alone, I didn't have the opportunity, if you will, privilege, I say those in jest, of having some really painful words spoken, although they've come over the years, and they have come certainly to many of the women that I've walked with. Things like, what's your part in this? And maybe if you were doing X, Y, or Z, this wouldn't have happened. Tips on sexuality or types of sex. Very inappropriate, extremely unhelpful, very damaging. Sadly, some of those come from not only well-meaning friends, but even from pastors. A lot of people out there believe in a codependency model or co-addict model, and that's very much that the wife is somehow enabling the husband of this behavior. And how I know that that's real when we're talking about addictions, you know, alcoholism, drug, et cetera, many times in that situation, the wife knows the husband is a gambler or an alcoholic. The big difference is that when it comes to the sexual sin, many times, I would say 99% of the time, they're totally in the dark about this happening. And so while there may be subtleties in the marriage that need to be worked out down the road, codependency, enmeshment, old patterns in the relationship that aren't healthy, they need to be addressed. They cannot really be addressed up front. Initially, it needs to be, this is the man's issue. This is what he's done. He needs healing. And the woman really does need support and comfort and wisdom and guidance and counsel, not advice on what to wear to bed or what to do once she's there. That's really inappropriate and, again, quite hurtful and harmful.
Julianne, we have a question that came into the website, and the listener wrote, how do I have an open but not awkward conversation with my husband about porn and lying without it sounding like I'm accusing him of it?
Yeah, great question. I would say throw out the notion that it's not going to be awkward. There's a lot of conversations we need to have in life. Let's face it, they're awkward. When Jesus spoke to the woman at the well, that was awkward. When we talk to our husband about this, when we talk to our teenagers about this, it's awkward, but we shouldn't shy away from that. Many times our fear and the uncomfortableness of it being awkward, we withdraw, and that's the very time and place when we need to move into it and speak into it. I usually use an open-ended question to start. You know, gee, honey, I heard this radio show, or I read this book, or, you know, whatever. This is really common, you know, whether people are in the church or not in the church, you know. The statistics say that men are struggling with sex addiction, with online porn. I'm sure you've seen it. Can you tell me what your experience has been in the past? And then be able to bring into, is it a struggle for you now? This might take men off guard. My guess is men will say, oh, no, I've never seen it. You know, don't look at it. But to be patient and ask questions and say, the important thing to me is to know what's going on, even if you are struggling, versus having it hidden. And truly, every woman that I've talked with, they want to know. They don't want their husbands to keep this from them. And many men, I think every man that we've met, wants to keep it hidden because they don't want to hurt their wives. And so it's the hiddenness that hurts them, as well as the actions and the behaviors.
Is it that they don't want to hurt their wives foremost, or that they're ashamed of what they're doing?
I think it's both. But I want to say that some men don't struggle as much with the morality of it. Maybe when they were a teenager, that their dad showed them a Playboy and said, hey, son, you know, this is a woman and this is how you have sex. You know, so maybe they were introduced through it that way. Or maybe it's just kind of always been there and they never really thought about it. That kind of man is out there. And some guys see it and it's just not a thing for them. But the pornography of today is very different from the pornography of 20, 30, 40 years ago, the pornography of our fathers, or even what Michael looked at 30 years ago. And he probably addressed that when you had him on. The pornography that's on the internet is really explicit, and it's made to grab attention. And our brains are wired such that even if we're not interested, it can penetrate and stimulate in a way that's beyond what our minds were created to tolerate. So the addictive factor behind online pornography, it's just about as addictive as, you know, heroin, chemically to the brain for what happens.
There's no question. I never did methamphetamine, but the guys that I worked with, and Bill, we've worked with a lot of guys who struggle with that. A lot of them said the first time they smoked it, they're addicted, and at least psychologically, and pornography is the same deal.
It is, yes.
It's always there. That's something exciting to break from boredom. Just take a look at it, and you can get it right on your phone. Gosh, how convenient.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely, George. It's everywhere now. You know, used to be you'd have to go down in the basement and in the back room behind the boxes to find Dad's stash, or, you know, go down the street to the convenience store and go to the back aisle, or, you know, that was hidden. It's not hidden anymore. And more than that, it's a perpetrator. Pornographers and online pornography are out there to get men hooked, and they're out there to get our children hooked. So it's very aggressive, and it is a perpetrator to our culture. Just for those who are looking for it, it's actively coming at people.
I think a lifelong struggle for me has been the sexuality and how I was raised and how it was exciting, and then all of a sudden you're married in a Christian marriage, and you're supposed to be normal and do that, and the fit is hard, and the adjustment is a lifelong struggle. And I'll speak for myself, but I don't think I'm that much different than most guys. And it's bigger than we are.
It is.
It's a tough deal.
Julianne, let me ask you this. We're talking to Julianne Cusick tonight, Restoring the Soul Ministries. And let's back up to the question where you have that conversation. The caller said, you know, you have an awkward conversation with your husband about porn and lying without it sounding accusing, and you answered it well. Let's say you have that conversation, and he replies and says, okay, I do. I do look at it. I do from time to time look at it. What do you say then?
Yeah. Well, the woman's going to feel absolutely devastated, just as I did. And if she has her wits with her at that point, thank you for sharing, I'm glad you shared, is a great first sentence. Because coming into the light, whatever it is you're struggling with, whether it's an addiction, alcohol, drug, porn, sex, whether it's something that's shameful, maybe a woman was married and divorced very young and she's ashamed of that, or she's had an abortion. Anytime there's regret, shame, and somebody's coming into the light, thank you for sharing. That's a huge step. Tell me more. And really ally herself with him as support to be able to not do his healing for him or get him the help he needs. It's just the opposite. Enabling him and empowering him and giving the freedom to go and get well, and knowing that she's going to need help and support along that journey as well. You know, they're opening a can of worms, and it, to say the least, a time bomb, I think, is more what women have described it to me as. And they get covered in all of the gook that explodes as well. It's where you go from there. Do you want it hidden? Do you really want to pretend your whole marriage? Do you want to keep the secret? Or would you rather have it out in the open, even though it's devastating and it's hard to wade through and it's a long journey and there's no guarantee, you know, that it's going to be healed and your marriage is going to be restored or your husband's going to be restored? And the women, even though they're walking through the devastation, and I agree with them, I'd rather have the truth than to live with the lies.
Gosh, Bill, I'm listening to the time bomb. I think there's a time bomb involved for the guy. He's probably got a pornography problem since he's 13.
Yes.
And then a landmine for the lady. She's married. She's obedient to God. And all of a sudden, she steps on a landmine. Her world blows up.
Yeah. It's there's a lot of landmines out there in this.
There are.
In this subject. We are talking to Julianne Cusick. She and her husband, Michael, have a ministry called Restoring the Soul. Is it .org or .com, Julianne?
That's a good question.
Yeah.
I think it's restoringthesoul.com.
Okay.
Make sure if they go to .org and it's not Michael and Julianne Cusick, to try, they can even search our names.
Yeah, we'll look it up at the break. We'll come back.
Okay.
We're
going
to have one more segment with Julianne Cusick. Thanks for listening tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery on Faith Radio. We'll be back in just a minute. Thanks for staying with us tonight. You're listening to Real Recovery. So glad you, hope you're enjoying the conversation tonight. We're talking to Julianne Cusick, and the website is restoringthesoul.com. I just looked it up. I'm useful, George.
You're quick.
I'm quick and useful.
I looked it up, too. It is .com. How embarrassing that I don't know that.
Don't worry. Julianne, I'm curious about, you know, intimacy issues with men. I don't know. We can't probably go into this with just our last segment.
I might have to leave here.
Without our heads exploding
yeah.
in this side of the studio. But I think boys, by nature, they have always consistently felt kind of a certain level of shame in conjunction with it. Like, it, you know, they like it too much, but if they don't do it right, maybe it'll get taken away. And, you know, they don't ever feel like they can measure up in intimate relationships. I think that's something that creates a desire for men to escape.
Hmm.
Do you have any thoughts about that? I could be completely off base, George, and you can disagree with me because I didn't talk to you about this.
Well, that's a great question, Bill. I'm glad that you brought up intimacy. I believe that pornography, as much as it is a problem, any type of addiction, it's more than just the problem. I believe it's a symptom of an even greater problem. There's a deeper issue underneath our addictions that's driving our addiction. And to really have a true recovery, a real recovery, you have to get to the heart of the matter underneath. My husband Michael's been free from sex addiction for 20 years, and yet during those 20 years has still struggled with what we would call an intimacy disorder. Many sexual addictions underneath have an intimacy disorder where the man is afraid of that emotional intimacy, that emotional closeness, that ability to be vulnerable, soul naked, if you will, and be present to another and have that other person be present to them. Women were wired differently. Maybe it's because we were created to carry life in our womb and give birth and hold the baby close and nurse. We're more wired for relationship, to be vulnerable, for that emotional intimacy. But it is something that is daunting for many, many, many men. Of, I am scared to be who I am in front of you. I'll be found out. I'll be left. If you really knew who I was, you wouldn't love me. And true intimacy is being able to see into the other person, be seen into, and to have that presence with one another. It's pretty terrifying.
It's pretty deep, too.
Yeah, it is deep. George and I are
very deep.
We're both quiet right now.
Well, you know, I'm a guy that lives alone and has barbed wire fence around his house with landmines in the front yard, so I get that, but there's a lot of effort here and risk. And I think you hit on the big picture that it starts real early for men. It's interesting to me when we talk about this that the only solution to help the guys and the women is Jesus, because otherwise it's just way, way too big. And the desire has to come from Jesus to change, doesn't it?
You're asking me?
Yes. No, I wasn't going to ask Bill that. I'm going to pay for that.
Like I would have the answer.
Well, I was wondering. I was waiting.
No, that was a Julianne question.
Yeah, that's a Julianne. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, for men and women both, let's face it, we live in a broken world. We live in a fallen world. We've been hurt. Anytime we're hurt, we build up walls and fences. So I've had mine plenty. So we can level the playing ground a little bit to know that that's why they're there. We don't have the barbed wire fence and the landmines out front because we've lived a perfect life. We have that because we've been wounded, and we don't want to be wounded again. So somewhere in ourselves, we've got to find that place that we are grounded. And the benefit as a believer is that we can have that groundedness with Christ. It can't just be the rules. It's got to be the relationship.
Yes.
We've got to have that realness with Christ. When I was angry, I told him I was angry. He could have, you know, smite me, you know, anytime he would. But that, I was honest with him. And so in order to be honest with God, we have to be honest with ourselves. It's a lot of self-deception out there that goes on. And so are we willing to be honest with ourselves about who we are and what we want and what we're doing and how we feel and bring that to Jesus? And if we can do that, then maybe we can do that with another human being.
I think that honesty, guys, ties into, I'm divorced myself, and about 6 years after I was divorced, kind of working through it, I was talking with a guy and he said, you know, you're lucky you're still alive because you broke a covenant with God. And I was like, what? I think we have this delusion, this deception, or pornography, everybody's looking at, I'm not that bad, you know, and if we get in the Word of God, we are accountable, there are consequences, And there's a code, and it's real easy to not see that.
Well, I want to say to you, I'm so sorry that someone said that to you, because Jesus came as a grace, and he gave us divorce as a grace. And if we're going to take that measuring rod that, you know, you're lucky you're still alive, that you broke the covenant with God, if we're going to take that to the nth degree, then look at the commandments. You know, thou shalt not murder, steal, commit adultery. And Jesus says, you know, don't lust. Don't be angry with your brother. Well, I mean, every one of us would be gone. His love is so greater than any of us realize. And we want to manage it, so we use the measuring stick. And God is so much bigger than our sin, and he's so much bigger than the rules. He's so much bigger than a divorce. His love far goes beyond that. His hand, he says that he bends down to feed us.
I really like that, and I appreciate that. Part of my point is, you know, I don't always think about God when I do my actions, fair? And, you know, when we're struggling with that, I loved what you talked about, how honest you were. You were angry at God. Why wouldn't
Absolutely.
You be? Gosh.
Right. Yeah.
So thank you for that.
One of the things I would like to say, again, I want to just thank you, Bill, and Real Recovery on Faith Radio, and George, that you have this ministry to your listeners, and that you're really willing to address something that the church is kind of shy to address. And then many times when they do, they address it poorly. So thank you, and I want to leave a word again to the women who are listening. Maybe they've just tuned in, but I want them to know they are not alone. There is help, there is hope, and there is healing. I, for one, was devastated, and I think every woman is, but I learned that my husband, while he has the power to devastate me, he does not have the power to destroy me. Jesus holds on to the very depth of who I am, and in him we can get through this and become better. We haven't talked about how God is such a redemptive God, but Jesus is a redeemer, and so no matter what happens to us in our life, he can redeem it, and that's his desire, is to redeem it.
Julianne, we just have a couple minutes left, and one of the questions, one of the things I share with guys in, that I work with in recovery is I often say to them, don't promise, just prove, because talk is cheap, as you know.
It is.
And one of the hardest things, obviously, in your situation would be to regain trust. When did you start to feel the shift from total betrayal to hints of trust?
Yes, that's a great question. I hope we have enough time to give it a decent answer.
We'll have you back on again. Trust
okay.
me.
You know, how trust began was really Michael's commitment to me to be completely honest. And so that meant many times him coming to me about something that had happened in the past that he wanted me to know. He didn't want anything hidden. And it involved, if in the present day moment, if he was triggered or tempted or had an interaction that he felt uncomfortable with, he would come to me and tell me. And day after day, week after week, month after month, while this was very hard and painful to hear more of what had happened or to hear current struggle, what started to grow was the awareness that this man is being completely honest with me. And because of that, I can trust him.
You know, there's that, talked to a friend of mine this morning at breakfast, and he said, you know, the more you remember, the more you remember.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, it's just like telling a joke, and you can't think of a good, clean joke to tell, and then all of a sudden people start telling them, and all of a sudden you start remembering other jokes. And I suppose the more you start thinking about memories, the more other memories come up. And then you could be guilty of going, why didn't you tell me that before? And you go, because I just remembered it.
Yes. That's why I believe that coming into the light is a process. Some therapies out there will do a one-time kind of disclosure, you know, as an event. And for me, disclosure was a process. It took Michael time. There were lots of things that he had hidden. He uses the analogy of having, you know, five beach balls under the water, and they're all wanting to pop, and when one finally does, it throws off the balance, and then, boom, all the others pop up too. That was our process. You know, they were, and deception is like that. You know, we're trying to hide from ourselves. We've got a divided heart. We really don't want, we're keeping it from ourselves, not just, you know, our wife or God, friends, our boss, et cetera. So yes, when things start to come into the light, many times when you do start to remember, you do start to remember more.
Mm-hmm.
So I like that.
So your website is restoringthesoul.com. You can go on and check out the resources that Michael and Julianne Cusick have. If that is your story, or you know someone who has a story like it, it'd be a wonderful place to go. Michael's book, Surfing for God, is an incredibly good book, and I've read it and passed it on to many people, and it's just been an absolute delight having you on the show, Julianne. And would you please come back and be another do another episode with us?
Well,
I'm already groveling.
I'd be honored. Thank you.
Okay,
thank you
we
so
have
much.
That. We have that in writing, George.
Yep.
So thank you for listening to Real Recovery tonight. We're just delighted you were able to be with us. I hope you enjoyed tonight's program. You can go on myfaithradio.com, pass it on to your friends. Go under Real Recovery, and you can send this message out to others. Thank you very much. Good night, and God bless. Hi, I'm Bill Arnold with George Fraser.
Hi, Bill.
Thanks for checking out this podcast, A Real Recovery. You can hear the show live Sundays at 5 p.m. This, as well as many other podcasts, are available to listen to while you take a walk or do whatever you want to do. The address is myfaithradio.com. Thanks for listening.